Welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast, presented by Gemini, your bridge to the future of money.
All right, everybody, gather around. I hope you're having a fantastic morning, noon, or night, wherever you are in the world. You are certainly in the right place. We are going to be diving into some incredible things today, all around algorithmic trading and business building as well. We have an incredible guest, Mr. Ian Weisberger, the CEO and founder of CoinRoutes. Ian, welcome to the show, and how are you doing?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Bryce. It's been pretty good. I actually am on my way home back to Dubai from the Plan B conference that Tether put on in Lugano. So it's definitely been an interesting couple weeks in crypto.
Man, that sounds awesome. Brendan, you ever made your way out to Dubai?
I've yet to do it, but I've seen a lot of people like it out there. Like, it looks like a cool place. I heard that the food's pretty good. Obviously, it doesn't rain a lot, so it's already pretty different from Florida, but...
No, yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, I've been once and spent a couple weeks out there and really did fall in love with that city. So it's cool that you're living out there full time.
Yeah.
Well, before we dive into your background, tell us about the Plan B conference. What was that all about?
Yeah, I mean, it was really interesting to connect with all the ecosystem participants in Tether. And, you know, if you guys remember when Bitfinex was a big exchange back originally, yeah. They're kind of the OGs. But now more people, I would say, know about Tether versus Bitfinex. But it's actually interesting. I forgot the actual numbers, but they're very like low on overall volume rankings. But they're like, I think, number four in terms of assets still. So they have a ton of assets. It's just the asset, the velocity of the actual trading is lower, but and I think that's also really interesting to compare them versus Binance, who over the past couple of weeks has seen, I think, you know, 20 billion in outflows or something crazy like that. Yeah. So it's been interesting to see the different exchanges in the ecosystem over the years.
Yeah, it seems like Bitfinex historically has had really good liquidity, but like none of the like wash volume that Binance and a lot of these offshore exchanges just generate.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the thing is, everyone's been you know, what's interesting is a couple, was it like 2 weeks ago now, Black Friday in crypto.
Oh, yeah.
People, I think, realized that these perp future venues weren't like real, if that makes sense. And that, you know, they thought they had a position. They thought they were long 10 Bitcoin, but they got, or short or whatever, but they got washed out by the auto deleveraging mechanism. So I think people now are realizing that, you know, trading on these perp venues is not actually the same as holding or you know, shorting spot. So it's been interesting to see how that's kind of evolving.
Yeah. Did CoinRoutes help folks navigate a little bit of that Black Friday event on October 10th? What was your experience?
It's a good question. I mean, look, it's one of those things where when you're in it at the heat of the moment, you feel like the world's on fire, but actually we didn't go down. Our system was great. None of our clients got washed out, which is amazing, because I literally told all our, you know, all our relationship managers and sales guys to, you know, be at the phone bank, so to say, you know, making sure that all of our clients were okay. But yeah, no, we definitely saw certain people got stopped out of positions that shouldn't have. And we were on the phone on Telegram, you know, as it were, with clients, making sure that they were good. We heard some competing platforms went down, you know, through the grapevine, because some of our clients actually have, you know, multiple systems and obviously they trade on multiple venues, but yeah, a lot of exchanges were struggling. And so we actually called that out before the exchanges admitted to that. Typically we can see like as an exchange starts falling down, the error rates go up and then we're like, okay, so-and-so exchange is having problems, right? To kind of get our clients to get out before it's too late, before it goes hard down. So yeah, it's definitely when that sort of volatility happens, it's interesting to be able to see the whole market.
All right, Crypt Nation fam, let's pause for 1 second and talk about an important issue going on right now, and that's SIM swap attacks. SIM swap attacks are becoming a serious threat, especially in crypto. If someone gets control of your phone number, they can access your bank accounts, your exchanges, emails, and even your private messages. That's why the Crypto 101 podcast is partnered with Afani. It's America's most secure mobile service, offering a guaranteed protection against SIM swaps with added privacy. Since launching, not one single Afani user has ever been SIM swapped. And for some reason, if it ever does happen, you're backed by up to $5 million in insurance against financial losses. This is literally why we chose to partner with them. It is our favorite thing about Afani is the insurance policy of up to $5 million if it does happen to you. Afani runs on either AT&T or the Verizon network, and you get to choose which one. There are no contracts, and it is super easy and seamless to sign up. You also get a 60-day money-back guarantee, so there's zero risk in trying it out. Right now, for our listeners, you get $99 off when you sign up at Afani.com/crypto101. That's Afani.com/crypto101, or check the show notes below for a link. These days, your phone number is probably more valuable than your social security number, so make sure it's protected with Afani.
Look, most people still think meme coins are an outright gamble. And they're right, in a sense. Most meme coins are. But what if I told you that you could identify the 1% that are about to explode? That's exactly what our meme coin research team does. While everyone else is chasing pumps and getting rugged, our team has built a systematic method for spotting legit breakout candidates early. And the results, guys, they've identified meme coins that have went on to gain as much as 8,200% in a matter of months. And they're not getting lucky. They're following a repeatable process. And I've never seen a track record as good as theirs. And now they're sharing exactly how they're doing it and how you too can spot the meme coins poised to skyrocket next. So get the full breakdown for totally free at www.cryptorevolution.com/meme coins, that's M-E-M-E coins, before they take it offline.
Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body actually is? I found that out firsthand when I took the True Age test from True Diagnostic, and it completely changed the way I think about my health. With just a simple at-home test, you can find out your true biological age with no doctor visits or labs. Just a quick, painless finger prick. You mail in your sample using a prepaid package, and in 2 to 3 weeks, you will get a detailed online report about your aging and health. The test breaks down how fast 11 key systems like your heart, brain, liver, and lungs are aging, plus 75 longevity biomarkers covering things like metabolic health, immune response, and disease risk. Your biological age, how old your cells and organs really are, is actually the number one predictor of your risk for serious diseases like heart disease, cancer, and dementia. That's why knowing it can be life-changing, and that's exactly what TrueAge helps you do. They made it so easy to get my blood drawn, show me my results, and give me the data so I could make the perfect action plan for me to better my health. If you're serious about longevity or just curious about what your body's real age is, head to TrueDiagnostic.com and use my code Crypto101 for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's TrueDiagnostic.com, code Crypto101 for 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
Yeah, it's been interesting. In recent weeks, it feels like there's been a lot of outages. It's happened with Coinbase and Robinhood. And like it felt like everyone was going down, whether it was that event or some of the other big ones that we've kind of had leading up to this. There's been a lot. And so it's been interesting. But, you know, it's good to hear that you guys were able to stay up. And you have the experience to back it up. In fact, I got to know if this is true. I was looking into you before we started the podcast. I saw that you started building in tech when you were 12. You launched your first business at 14, and then you co-founded CoinRoots in 2017. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where you always kind of like, I think certain people know that they're going to be in tech, and I just kind of knew. I mean, I'm really happy that I ended up in tech because I don't think I would have made it otherwise. Like, I don't think I could have worked any other job. I'm just, you know, I'm much better with computers than with people. But, you know, recently I've dealt with a lot of people in my role as CEO, and so I don't really do that much tech anymore, actually. It's kind of funny. But look, I started my career in tech in high school. I actually had a web hosting business in 2008 when I was in high school. And one of the core pain points I had was my merchant processing account. We're always getting like flagged and shut down because I was selling web hosting plans and whatever. And literally like I had 5 different merchant processing accounts. And one time they all got shut down at the same time and I had no way to take money in. And that's why I was like, wait, like there has to be a better way to be able to bank and take money in and send payments and pay contractors. I actually had a bunch of contractors in India because my teachers would take my laptop in class and I wouldn't be able to do tech support. Kind of a funny story. Just the merchant processing situation back then was not good. And so that's kind of why I started getting into crypto, why I realized that crypto was the future.
Yeah.
It totally makes sense. And it's funny, I love crypto because everybody comes at it from a different angle. Sometimes, yeah. You know, we speak to folks who came at it from, you know, executive or Wall Street. Some people come, you know, cypherpunk cryptographers. Some people like yourself come, you know, from the tech world. And, you know, we really want to get a good understanding just at the outset of exactly what CoinRoutes is. We've kind of alluded to it. It, you know, helps folks manage their positions on exchanges. But give us the deep... Yeah. Sort of understanding of CoinRoutes here.
Yeah, so CoinRoutes is the market leading platform for institutional trading across all of the different crypto venues. So you imagine you're a crypto hedge fund, you have accounts at Binance and Coinbase, and you might trade on Hyperliquid, and you need a central place to manage all of your positions, manage your risk thresholds, and just do a better job trading. Because if you're only looking at one exchange, you're not going to get good prices. So essentially what we're able to do is look at all of the exchanges and then figure out where is the best place to trade. And what ends up happening with a lot of these crypto markets is they're kind of mean reverting around each other. So 1 minute Hyperliquid might be a better bid than Binance, but it reverts around each other. So not only having multiple exchange accounts at once, but knowing where all the other markets are, you can do a better job trading on a single venue. So to that end, we allow people to do things like arbitrage, where you can sell a perpetual future and buy spot, or you want to do a TWAP order, or you want to do a pairs trade, or you want to do a basket. And so we have these really sophisticated institutional order types. Now, more recently, we've also gone down to high net worth individuals. So if you're a pro trader and you have a $10 million account on Bybit or whatever, you need a better way to trade than just swing trading on Bybit directly on their GUI. Or if you have a, you know, basic bot that's a trend following strategy, you want a better execution system that lets you also manage your risk and see your positions across all exchanges.
It's almost like a brain or like a central nervous system for a crypto hedge fund.
Yeah. And so where previously you would have to be a really large hedge fund that has a lot of resources and you might have full-time engineers working on your trading system. Now we kind of democratize that by allowing even smaller hedge funds to have it. That said, we do have the largest crypto hedge funds on the street using us, but we also have kind of gone to smaller funds where it might just be one guy trading, you know? Mm-hmm. So we service kind of the whole market of trading firms down to the pro trader individual.
How have you seen crypto trading evolve over the years from what felt like back in, you know, 2016, 2017, it was pretty much only retail guys. And now it feels like there's all these institutions. But like, how has that kind of changed the market structure from your perspective?
Yeah, I think when the ETFs got approved a couple of years ago now, it really changed things. It really signaled to the market that the institutions are here and, you know, you're going to now be able to hold this in your retirement account if you use certain brokers. Obviously, some retirement account administrators still said, no, you can't buy this thing, right? And to this day, we're still fighting that. But it seems like everyone, I would say, that's probably listening to this would understand that war has been won and that like institutions and retail now have access to this asset class, that it's not going anywhere, right? And if you compare that to 2017 when we started this business, I mean, that was not for sure at all. There was no ETF there. You know, banks were shutting down people's bank accounts for even purchasing Bitcoin, right? In many countries in the world, you saw tens of percent differences in the spot instrument price between exchanges, right? Like I remember when there was a $3,000 price difference between Kraken and Coinbase, and that was just spot. Like you could just make free money. People were printing money. Now it's a bit more nuanced. You have to be a bit smarter to make money trading. In the current market structure, right? Like you might have to buy a future on perp on one exchange and sell it on the other and collect the basis between that. Funding rate arbitrage is more popular now. It's a bit more complicated. There's less like free money available in the ecosystem, and the markets have gotten quite a bit more efficient.
Yeah, it's been fascinating, and I know all of us have kind of been here to watch crypto and especially the trading side evolve. And it's been fascinating to see like a lot of those TradFi kind of concepts come into crypto, which makes the TradFi people in general kind of open up to this idea. But in context to your distributed smart order router, what makes algorithmic trading so effective compared to manual execution? Because this is the topic that we get a lot of questions about, the algorithmic side versus the manual side.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at the way that this market is evolving, it used to be that everyone was doing OTC deals on voice on Telegram, right? And then that switched to these single dealer platforms, which is when you you have an account with the B2C2 or Intermediate or whatever, and they give you a nice little GUI where you can buy and sell electronically, right? This market is undeniably moving electronically. Yeah. And so what we're allowing our clients to do is rather than having to basically pick up the phone and do a voice quote with a broker that's then using an algorithm to trade out. They can do it themselves. They can have their own algorithms to trade the stuff. And so it's better for certain types of trading where you don't need the immediacy of trading kind of voice, right? And so ultimately, this market is moving to an electronic market, and we're enabling people to do that that previously wouldn't have the resources to do so.
Yeah. Do you see a difference between maybe the institutional side or maybe like the high net worth individuals trading more algorithmic based, whereas retail tends to do it more manual? Because the way that I look at it is there's a lot of people that get lured into this trading bot dream, right? There's, you know, the world's moving towards AI. You need to be using a trading bot or an AI or an algorithm or something. But a lot of the times, the ones that are marketed towards the retail people just like aren't good. They don't work. They underperform and overpromise. But on the institutional side, like that's a real thing. But they also spend a lot more money kind of building out these things. And I think it makes a lot more sense for an institution to use it. But do you think that it makes as much sense for retail to use it as well?
Yeah. I mean, on an institutional side, so we have clients that are directional, which means they're buying a bunch of coins and hoping they go up or selling them and hoping they go down. They're directional. We also have a large constituency of our clients that are market neutral. And so those market neutral clients are happy to make 15 to 20% on a mostly delta neutral, market neutral basis. And they're going and raising a ton of cash to do that. And people and institutional investors are happy to make 15 or 20% on a relatively risk-free basis. Mm-hmm. If you're a retail guy, a lot of them look at 15 to 20% and say that there's no way this is enough. I want, you know, 20% a month. Like that, that's not real, right? Like you're going to underperform, right? You're probably better off just buying and holding at that point if someone's promising you that kind of return. But we are seeing, I would say, 15 to 20% relatively risk-free in the market right now with
on an annualized basis.
On an annualized basis, exactly. On what our clients are running, the successful ones. I would say that's reasonable.
Yeah, and it seems like that like is a smart way to go about it. And that's like one of the big misconceptions that I see with people is that they think, a trading bot or an algorithm or all these things, they'll be able to give me that per month. Or some people, you know, want to get levered up and they want to do that every day. when in reality, that's just not really possible to make that kind of consistent return every day, every week, every month. Like there's going to be times where it fails. And I think that's where algorithmic trading and trading bots and all these things like thrive is when you're looking at a smaller return that's still I would say really good. You're right. 15, 20% a year, you compound that over a long period of time, you're doing pretty freaking good for yourself. And that's where these things can be so, so strong and so consistent. And yeah, it's just the misconception that I see a lot of retail traders have where they have this misunderstanding of like how these kind of things work and the rewards that could be earned with something like this.
Yeah, I mean, like it wasn't this cycle, but I remember last cycle, one of my older family members sent me a link of a, you know, 10% guaranteed return per month crypto scam. And I was like, you can't do that. That's a scam, you know? I have to say, I think I've seen a little less of that this cycle, but it's still out there. And yeah, I think retail should be wary of that because that's not right. That's not realistic, right?
Yeah, like I've heard so many people, you know, ask me or just show, you know, I could do this program and it's 2% a day. I'm like, if you compounded 2% a day and you started with like $10,000, it'd be worth like well over $10 million. And that would just be in 1 year. And then the next year it would be like $1 billion. It's like, you think everybody's going to be making $1 billion off this? But people don't think about the math behind it and they just, they get scammed. So anybody who's listening, if you're trapped in one of these products, don't send any money to them. A lot of the times they're just outright scammed.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen, unfortunately, some of them where, you deposit, I don't know, like one Bitcoin and then, okay, we're going to lock you your account if you don't send more. And it's really, it's really unfortunate.
It's so sad.
You know, it's sad what's happened in this market. I mean, I remember seeing back in the day, like Anchor Protocol, and I was like, how are they generating this yield? Mm. Like, what's going on? Yeah. And I would kind of tell anyone that would listen, like, I don't know that this makes the most sense, but you never know, right? It's hard. I think I would say, like, if you're looking for yield in the crypto markets, like you have to, I wouldn't say you have to fully understand, but you should at least ask, like, how are you generating this yield, right?
Yeah.
And if someone's saying, okay, we're lending it out to other people, great. Like, okay, whatever. Max like 20% yield, like probably a lot less than that. I've heard that like you can get collateralized loans at around like 12% with certain counterparties. That's kind of where it's at. And if you're doing some market making where there's like a little bit of legging risk, then up to 20%. But I would say above that is not realistic.
You know, it's interesting
strategies.
Yeah, no, it's super interesting you bring this up. And Anchor Protocol was, you know, part of the whole Terra Luna explosion back in the day, you know, promising 20% yield. And then everybody declared the death of the algorithmic stablecoin. Right. However, there's been now, you know, other algorithmic stablecoins, you know, I think most notably Athena's USDE. What do you think different. About that?
Yeah. So actually, the way that Athena USDE work is basically is this arbitrage that I talked about, where you're buying the spot. So you buy Bitcoin spot, for instance, and then you sell the future against it. And so on the whole, usually you should be generating positive return. Now, of course, when the markets go gap out and go crazy volatile, those funding rates can actually turn negative and the pool actually loses money. But if you look at what happened to Athena during the whole Black Friday, it actually stayed solvent. The protocol was able to create and redeem units of USDE at par value at $1. But the issue was the way that the exchanges were pricing it as collateral. Binance basically said, okay, this thing isn't actually worth the net asset value. It's worth what our order book says it's worth. And so that created this huge mismatch where people got liquidated and Binance said, oh, actually, we messed up a little bit here. Have some money back. And it wasn't enough for the people that got washed out. But a lot of people got washed out that shouldn't have, because rather than saying it's worth $1 because I can redeem this for $1 worth of crypto right now, it's worth what our order book says it's worth. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you can make the argument that that was manipulation and maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But at the end of the day, the way that they were pricing it wasn't actually based on the underlying asset value, which I think was wrong, was incorrect. And so I think people need to take a look at how they're actually pricing these assets are basically kind of like a tokenized money market fund, right? Like they're a tokenized fund. You should price it. Like if you look at a money market fund on the street, typically it's priced at the asset that's close to the asset value. It doesn't go way below if it's redeemable, right?
Yeah. No, it's super crazy. And the DeFi stuff seemed to hold up pretty well, while a lot of the CeFi stuff kind of went kaput. And I was reading some postmortems about maybe like why this happened. And yeah, like some of these DeFi protocols had hard-coded $1 equals one USDE. And that was able to like help them not, you know, liquidate, you know, people unfairly and stuff. But did you see any other triumphs or catastrophes in the DeFi world during the past recent times?
You know, I think so. If you look at I think the big thing that people are now finding out about, because they've never heard about it before this event, is the auto deleveraging. And so basically what that means is if your position goes so far, like let's say you're long, you're short Bitcoin. Like, so even if your position would be profitable, you short it at 125, Bitcoin goes to 102. The whole system would be insolvent if they actually let it get to 102. So they actually stopped you out at a higher price than 102. They said, okay, you're done at 110. And even though technically you could have made more money, they said, no, you're done. Because otherwise the longs on the other side would have just been wiped out and the whole system would be insolvent.
So and the exchange would be bankrupt.
And the exchange would be bankrupt. And exactly. So they basically say, okay, we're going to give you a worse price because this thing moved so far so quickly that we would be bankrupt. And so we need to basically stop you out at a price that wasn't real, at a worse price than you otherwise would have gotten. And that happened across the board. So if you look at what some of the centralized exchanges do to avoid the crazy auto deleveraging, like Bybit, for instance, they actually smooth it out over time. So they have like a little bit of a rate limit on it. So when we went to V, when we had the V from like, you know, 125 to 102 and then from 102 to 108, but like some of the exchanges didn't actually go all the way to 102. They kind of smoothed it out. So they let it recover a little bit. And so what that means is less people get liquidated. But the risk that you have is if you're smoothing it out, if it actually kept falling and settled below 102 or at 102, that there would be just losses that would have to be socialized, right? And so some of the exchanges take the tactic of, well, we have an insurance fund that's big. We've made a lot of money for years. Fine. Like, we'll take that risk. And it turned out that in that instance, it didn't go to zero. It stopped at 102 and it bounced to 108 almost immediately. But the DeFi protocols don't necessarily have that ability to do that. They don't necessarily have the huge insurance funds and they don't want to have like losses socialized. So they stop you out faster. So I would say that more people got auto deleveraged on the Hyperliquid than on Bybit because they had less of a smoothing, right? Like, it's hard to pick which one is the correct way to do it. I think there's merits for both, but that's just how these things tend to work. But also, I think a lot of people didn't know what ADL meant or what the mechanics of the futures exchanges were before that event because they never had to worry about it.
They didn't read the fine print.
Yeah.
They just took the free 125 times leverage and cross-margined their account and said, let's do this thing.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Do you think that, like, you know, not to like, you know, I know you're not a lawyer to like get into like too much of the regulation stuff, but it feels like this kind of stuff doesn't really happen that much in like traditional markets, but does it? And like, do you think that like we're going to see some kind of self-policing or some standards to make sure we don't have something similar?
That's a really good point. I mean, it's just different, right? So if you want to trade futures in U.S. markets, let's say you're trading on the CME, you have to open an account with what's called a futures clearing merchant, an FCM, right? And you put up collateral with them. And then margin calls are once a day because there's no real-time liquidation, no real-time lending. And if someone in the system goes insolvent, then you have this whole like insurance fund and mutualization model. Long story short, it's extremely convoluted. It's not real time. It requires a lot of extra capital in the system to insure against losses. And I just don't see that full methodology working in crypto. It's a lot different in crypto where anyone can just go and sign up and get an account. Like in you know, when you're trading futures, potentially you could lose more money than what you put into the account, depending on your agreements, depending on who you are, et cetera. Like it's a bit weird. Whereas in crypto, you're only really able to lose what you put in terms of collateral. So you have to do real-time liquidation. So it's just a bit of a different game. But that said, I think like there should be some self-policing in terms of what we're doing to protect consumers. I think it's really complicated to figure out. Let's say you're trading on Binance. Let's say you have one Bitcoin and then you're trading futures against that one Bitcoin. The liquidation price that it shows you changes as the price of Bitcoin goes up or down. So a lot of people didn't realize that actually it only took a 20% move to wipe them out. They thought they had a 30 or 40% move, right? It's really confusing to see like what a stress test scenario looks like in these markets. It's not completely straightforward. And so I think people just thought that they were trading Bitcoin on leverage. They didn't realize how the liquidation prices worked and whatever, and they just got wiped out.
Yeah. No, it's kind of a bizarro world. And you know, I think that like if we kind of bring it back to CoinRoutes, you guys don't just help people like, you know, execute transactions fast and across a lot of different venues, but you help them save money. And you know, I know you guys have been doing a lot of transaction cost analysis, but I just kind of want to understand a little bit you know, about that and kind of some of your findings, and then maybe, you know, what do people who are like just on, you know, Coinbase or whatever, you know, just buying through the app, what do they maybe not realize about the fees and stuff?
Yeah, I would say if you're a retail user, I mean, a lot of people trade on Coinbase and Robinhood and whatever, and you're paying for ease of use, that's fine. Like if you're just buying and holding, probably it doesn't matter that you're paying, you know, up to 1% in fees. I think as you start buying and selling, and if you're doing what is essentially swing trading where you're buying and selling, then you need to figure out how to optimize your fees, and you need to move, you know, to Coinbase's more advanced product, for instance. You're probably not going to use the Coinbase app. You probably use what they call Coinbase Advanced Trade or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it's important, like if you're just buying and holding, it probably doesn't matter that you're paying 1% because this asset moves by more than that in a couple hours and in a day, for sure it moves by more than that. Where I think it really gets interesting is when you're trading kind of smaller names. Like if you're trading meme coins, you're trading these smaller names, then a buy order for a couple $1,000 could potentially move the market. Then it makes sense to, you know, be smart in how you're trading these things. And so what a lot of people were previously doing that are our clients, where they were just going to the interface, typing in limit prices and trading it manually. That's not the best way to trade these things, right? You probably want to scale into it over time. And that's where you would use a system like CoinRoutes to be able to trade in and out and break up your orders into small pieces and post them on the order book so you're not moving the price.
Yeah. And I mean, speaking of big orders, I mean, you all are doing over $40 billion in monthly volume. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Where is most of that liquidity coming from today?
I mean, the usual suspects are more around like 70 to 80% of our volume is futures, right? So it's trading on the big futures venues, Hyperliquid, Binance, Bybit, OKX, the big, you know, exchanges, right? But we definitely are seeing more interest in perp DEXs, I would say, especially after the Binance debacle. More and more people are wanting to trade on Hyperliquid and some other DEXs. And we're facilitating a couple $1 billion a month in perp DEX transactions now, and that's growing pretty rapidly.
How does Hyperliquid, you just mentioned it, how does it compare to some of these other options that are out there? Because it feels like it's exploded onto the scene. It's taken the vast majority of market cap. Everyone raves about it. It's hard for us in the US. I mean, we really can't use it as much, but you probably have a much better understanding. Like, how does this compare to everything else? And no pun intended, does it live up to the hype?
Yeah, I mean, look, a lot of our clients are trading on it. I can't really comment on regulatory matters of who is or isn't allowed to use it. That's not really, you know, what we do. But ultimately, a lot of people are using it. And if you look at the fee schedule, it's pretty cheap. It's cheaper than most of the centralized venues. And the rules are somewhat transparent. I would say they got into like a little bit of trouble on Black Friday, but not anywhere nearly as much as the centralized venues. Overall, they held up really well. They didn't go down a lot. I would, as I was kind of mentioning earlier, like it's more, they're you will be quicker to liquidate it than on trading like something like a Bybit if there's a crazy market move. Like they don't have the smoothing that some of the centralized exchanges have. Mm-hmm. But it's transparent in terms of how they're doing it. I think a lot of the other issue with these centralized venues is they're giving preferential treatment to certain clients. So one of the things that happened was people were worried that Athena was insolvent because they thought that they might have been auto deleveraged. Now it turns out they had special deals with the centralized exchanges where they were kind of more or less exempt from that auto deleveraging. They had a special deal. And that's one of the reasons why they stayed solvent. But on a perp-dex venue like Hyperliquid, it's much harder for people to have special deals. And so I think that's another reason why they've gotten so popular is people are mistrustful. Like if you look at the special deal that Alameda had with FTX, like they had no liquidations, they had unlimited credit, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not saying that anything like that is happening today, not on that scale. But it's been shown that there are definitely special deals that market makers have on exchanges with liquidations. And I think, you know, Hyperliquid is more fair in general, probably, you know, than the centralized venues.
All right, Crypt Nation fam, are you interested in effortlessly growing your Bitcoin portfolio? Because I know I am. The Bitcoin credit card by Gemini earns you Bitcoin back on every purchase. Use it like any credit card. You buy lunch, you get gas, any of your weekly grocery expenses, and you'll earn up to 4% back instantly in Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos straight into your account. All that with no annual fee. And right now, you can grab $200 of Bitcoin. That's right, a $200 Bitcoin welcome bonus with the Gemini credit card. It is the easiest way to start building your Bitcoin stack. Go to Gemini.com/card to learn more. Terms apply. See the link in the description for more information regarding rates and fees.
No, I totally agree. It's transparent. Like all those liquidations that happened on Bybit or Binance, apparently they were rate limiting it to, you know, 1 per second or something like that. And so when you have, you know, you could have thousands of liquidations in 1 second, but you would only show one of those liquidations is what the Hyperliquid guys were saying, because, you know, they basically said on chain, you could see every single liquidation that happened. But, you know, not to get too in the weeds, but I am curious about, you know, hooking up DeFi with your platform. You know, if, you know, I want to say trade on Uniswap or do something like that, do I have to give you certain keys to my wallet in order for that transaction to, you know, occur? Or is it a one-time approval? Is it multiple approvals? How does that kind of work?
Yeah, we have a couple modes. Like for institution, so for Hyperliquid, it's fine. They have trade-only keys that we have. So for the perp DEXs, we support it via that workflow. For Uniswap, we either require you to use a custodian, like a Fireblock. So we did a partnership with Fireblocks where we don't have to have access to your keys. And that's how we do it in that. And then we are working on some other methodologies to trade on DeFi that don't require custodians like Fireblocks for retail. So we're working that out to how to offer that product to retail that wouldn't necessarily have a custodian.
No, that's awesome.
Without taking custody. Yeah.
Yeah. It's certainly something that we're excited to learn more about. And, you know, maybe we'll have you back on when there's some more updates on the DeFi stuff for the everyday person. But one thing that I know a lot of people ask me and Brendan, as we kind of do these interviews with, you know, market experts and stuff, and we always get a different answer, but I'm curious what your signs that you see of a market top or a market bottom. Do you kind of like look at those funding rates and, you know, when they're blown out one way or another, that's an indicator? Do you see other things around like order size or order book liquidity that tips you off?
Yeah, it just feels different this time. I mean, I remember when Black Friday happened and it just like V-bottoms, like there was no, didn't really crash. I mean, everyone was saying doom and gloom and it's going to go down 75 or 80. It just didn't happen. And now it looks like things are, you know, recovering. S&P's at an all-time high, you know, gold's off its highs now. It seems like people are rotating back into risk assets. It just seems like we're not, you know, like a lot of people were saying, okay, 125 was the top. I just don't believe that's the case anymore. I think that we'll get higher in this cycle based on what's happened, based on how nicely it's recovered.
Yeah. And like, I'd even go so far, and we talked about this a little bit, but we've started having conversations about not only can we go further, but can this run last longer? And I think that that's like a pretty, I don't even think it's a hot take anymore. Like, I feel like there is this idea that the run can go longer this time around. And you look at some of the different catalysts that are happening in the background. And again, I don't think that's really as much of a hot take anymore. So that's kind of my thought is number one, I do believe that we can go further than $125,000. I would say that in my opinion, that's a probability. It's a likelihood, not just a possibility. I'd also say that it's pretty probable that we see an extended run. And when you kind of go back and you look at the last several, I guess, cycles, as you'd want to call them, it almost looks as if they have been elongating as adoption has been increasing. So that's kind of the way that I'm looking
at it. I mean, it's a global more. It's a global risk asset now. It wasn't really like
totally.
We didn't really have this level of assets in the ETF last cycle. We just didn't have the level of adoption that we have now. There's just way more market participants, undeniably. And so I think there's more demand.
And all, you know, on that point, it's kind of a perfect segue. Like, you know, you're in Dubai, you see sort of the Middle East and North Africa regions. I hear all the time about, you know, these sovereign wealth funds that are secretly accumulating Bitcoin. Some of them have announced that they have, like, you know, shares of MicroStrategy or you know, some Bitcoin. What are you seeing in terms of the, you know, institutional adoption trends in your area?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it is undeniable at this point that these sovereign wealth funds are allocating into Bitcoin through subsidiaries and venture firms and like a web of companies. I don't think it's as straightforward as them owning physical Bitcoin on their balance sheet. But, you know, there are a lot of companies in Dubai and the UAE that are very much exposed to the price of Bitcoin that are owned, you know, in large part by the sovereign wealth funds. So I do think that that trend will accelerate. And I do think that the adoption will accelerate throughout the region and globally. I think if some of the people that we're working with are issuing stablecoins, right, in the UAE and abroad, right, that will increase adoption. Ultimately, the more stablecoin issuance that exists, the more the crypto market cap can grow based on that. Like, there's been a link between the market cap of Tether and the, you know, market cap of Bitcoin that's been, you know, undeniable over the years. And so the more entry points into crypto that exists globally, the more that's going to accrue value to the crypto ecosystem.
Fascinating. I love that that take. And, you know, stablecoins, I think Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary in the United States, said that he thinks that stablecoins in the wake of the Genius Act are going to go up to something like 10 times the amount of market cap they have currently by the end of the decade. Yeah. So like in 5 years. So that would be incredible for crypto, a lot more liquidity. And, you know, I think the case is fully, you know, understood for Bitcoin pretty much, although allocations globally are pretty low, but like pretty much everybody gets it. Everybody's heard about it. I think Ethereum and Solana are starting to get there with, you know, some of the digital asset treasuries and the ETFs. But what do you make of like the smorgasbord of altcoins that are out there? Are you generally bullish on altcoins, or are you kind of like, you know, these are just, you know, trading instruments that shouldn't be bought and held?
Yeah, I mean, look, I am not a meme coin trader. Maybe someone else would have more, you know, input on that. But I do think we are seeing the emergence of certain what you could call altcoins that actually have real protocol revenue.
Yeah.
And I do think that over time, those are going to win. So, I mean, if you look at Hyperliquid, they're making over $1 billion a year, and 90%+ of that value is accruing to their token. There are other new DEXs that have launched as well that have similar mechanics. Ultimately, the killer app for crypto right now is trading and payments. So if you have this on-chain trading engine where the value actually accrues to the token, I think those are going to win over time versus the utility tokens or governance tokens or whatever. I mean, memes are this whole other category. But I think the days of these governance tokens just being worth a huge, huge amount of money where there's no value accrual to the ecosystem, I think those days are over. And I don't think that those coins will be successful long term. People are demanding that value accrue to the token holders now directly.
Yeah, fair enough, man. There really is a lot of speculation when it comes into altcoins. And the way that we kind of look at it is, you know, clearly there's going to be some ones that are doing some good stuff. They have actually working products. And we like to pay attention to those. But obviously, there's a lot of noise. You look at CoinMarketCap, and I checked this a couple of days ago, and it said that they had, and I'll check it again right now, but it said that they had around 22 million altcoins. Okay, so now it's up to almost 26 million altcoins that are listed. So there is a lot of noise, and you got to be careful with all of them. But I want to loop in one final question here. What do you think is the biggest myth about crypto trading, or maybe even market structure, that you wish that more people understood?
Yeah, I think I kind of mentioned it earlier, but ultimately the market is very different from traditional instruments if we look at how crypto derivatives are traded. You are only, when you trade a crypto derivative, you're only as a user at risk of losing the money that you put down. There's no like additional losses. There's no mutualized loss system usually. And so it's a very different system. So the traditional things, like if you look at the way that US equities work and by proxy, the, you know, the indexes, the futures that could be based on them, they have circuit breakers. They say if the thing moves by more than X percent in a day or whatever, it's shut off for 5 minutes and then 15 and then it's done. Then there's a trading halt. Like, you can't do that in a market where you have to be able to support real-time liquidations, where you have to just be able to de-risk the system on demand. And it's a 24/7, 365 market. Like, the mechanics are going to be different. It's not going to be exactly the same as equities and futures and FX. And I meet a lot of people from TradFi that say, oh, this is going to be exactly the same as TradFi. That's not going to happen. There's going to be a lot of similarities, but fundamentally, this is a 24/7, 365 global real-time market that is not going to be exactly the same as equities and futures. And so you need companies that are actually built to support this from the ground up that are supporting all of these different things, right? You're not going to, the traditional players ultimately are going to have to go out and buy things or, you know, partner to get the full functionality.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people who come in here and they get warned, hey, crypto is volatile. And they go, oh, I know. And then they come in and they experience a Black Friday event like we did the other week where they're, you're right, there's no circuit breakers when things are going down double digits. And then some of these altcoins are down 50% in a day.
And they go crying to the mama.
And there's no, Bryce, what's the saying? What's our favorite saying? There's no crying in the casino. Yeah, we were using that internally.
Yeah, I mean, it's about your risk appetite. The biggest issue was a lot of people didn't realize that these were cross margin. They had like one portfolio with their like they had Atom and Bitcoin sitting in the same thing, and then Atom was down 90% on one exchange. Yeah. And okay, their whole thing got wiped out. Like, you need to have different risk buckets for your trading accounts. You need to have sub accounts for your different portfolios. That's very important. You can't expect that these things aren't going to crash very like a lot and be bottom, right?
Totally. Man, this was awesome, Ian. We greatly appreciate your time. I know you guys got some travel ahead, so we don't want to make you miss your flight or anything.
Oh, no, this was great.
Yeah, this was a ton of fun, and hopefully everybody at home listening was able to pick up some golden nuggets, make some better trades, be more informed. And where could people kind of check you out, check out Coin Routes if they're qualified, and you know, just generally learn more and stay in touch?
Yeah, I mean, I post a lot of market intel on my Twitter and LinkedIn and same on the CoinRoutes. So it's just at Ian Weisberger and then CoinRoutes on LinkedIn and Twitter.
Awesome. We will be posting those in the show notes. Ian, thank you so much. Safe travels. And everybody at home listening, thanks for joining. We'll see you back next week, same time, same place with some more great guests.